Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the final regular season edition of Pulse of the Pack. It is a sour version. We got a lot to discuss here, and maybe what is quite possibly, I haven't let it all marinate yet, but it is quite possibly the worst game that I have ever seen played by the Packers, in person. So we have that. I am your host. I am Jacob Westendorf. I am driving home from Lambeau Field as we speak. I was at the game today, which you can say that was fortunate. You can say that was unfortunate. That's kind of up to you at this point. Join with me as always, though, is Jason Perrone. Jason, how was the Packers bar?
It was bittersweet. Today was the last day that my partner Jeremy Vanderlinden and I do Cheesehead TV Live. It was the last day we're going to do the show there. We're going to move on to another bar in Tempe, near my alma mater, Arizona State, next season, another Packers bar, so it's an exciting opportunity, but we had a lot of fun. It was actually a really good crowd because the game wasn't on TV here locally, so the bar was packed. I think everybody wanted to see the Packers off, watch one last game. They knew where Rodgers was going to start. I don't think anybody anticipated the result that we saw. And the other cool thing, we gave away a Green Bay Packers green and yellow colored bike that people have been drawing tickets for all season long, and we finally did the drawing today and gave it away to a lucky fan. But literally every week, everybody got one free ticket as an entry to this raffle. So I think that was another reason why, because once we gave away the bike at halftime, that bar cleared out pretty quickly, and can understand why. It's been a long time since the Packers have been shut out at home. I don't know if there's been one since I can recall. I was in the house for the opener in 2006 against the Bears when they lost 26-0. That was Mike McCarthy's first game as head coach of the Packers. That was also Devin Hester's coming out party. He had a punt return for a touchdown in that one. Aaron Rodgers gets knocked out. It was just a tough day. But I think by the end of it, we all kind of understood what there was to gain, and unfortunately – there wasn't a ton to gain by winning. But, Jacob, you were there. I heard the boos on TV. I imagine they were a lot louder in person.
They were. The loudest they got was before halftime when there was 9 seconds left and Joe Philbin elected to punt instead of running around and throwing a Hail Mary or something of that sort. But it was pretty rough throughout the day. It was the first time the Packers have been shut out of home since last season, which happened twice. It happened once against the Baltimore Ravens, which is definitely in the running for worst game I've ever seen, and another time against the Minnesota Vikings on Christmas Eve last year. So it hasn't been that long, but I don't blame you if you've blotted those from your memory. Let's jump in because, I mean, quite frankly, I don't know how much there is to say about a game like this. It was a glorified preseason game, and quite frankly, the Packers may not have even played to that kind of level. The final score, as you noted, was 31-Bagel. And, I mean, the Packers, even when Aaron Rodgers was in the game, looked just blech. Like, okay, Davante Adams was inactive today. Apparently that was decided during the week. It wasn't even close to him being able to play today. So Sterling Sharp's record will stand for at least another year. That was apparently a huge deal to the offense because, I mean, I had to chuckle at one point because during the game, I'm looking down the receiving corps, and I'm like, they ran a formation where Capri Bibbs, who they pulled off the street like a week ago, was out there at running back with Jamon Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Jake Kumerow. And I believe Lance Kendricks was the tight end in that formation. If that doesn't explain the state of affairs for – and, oh, yeah, DeShone Kizer was playing quarterback at this point, too. If that doesn't explain the I didn't even get all of it. I keep, like, trying to get in this point. Justin McCray was playing left tackle. Justin McCray was playing left tackle. Okay, now I'm done. If that doesn't explain the state of affairs that the Packers had this season – granted, injuries happen every year. I'm sure if this game mattered – David Bakhtiari could have played those sorts of things. But, my God, I think somebody said, Jason Wilde, I think, said going into this game, the Packers had 8 of their 22 preferred starters on offense and defense going into this game. That is insane. That's how the year ended. Obviously, the Packers didn't miss the playoffs because of injuries. There were a lot of other things that were in their control that did not go well. But Jason just, I mean, doesn't that reek of a preseason game? Give me some of your thoughts on some of those names I just mentioned.
It was worse than a preseason game. Like you said, they didn't even play to that level. I got Josh Jackson, your child, had a pick 6 in the preseason. That was the most exciting thing he did all year, except for grab the block punt for a touchdown in week 2. I mean, this game was just hapless. I don't think they were trying to, and I want everybody to just kind of like, take week 17, this Lions game, with a grain of salt, because I tweeted not often today because I didn't have much to say, and I'm tired of igniting my followers and unfairly so. So I took it easy today because obviously I didn't have anything nice to say. But basically, it was obvious pretty early that the Packers weren't trying to win this game. And even when Aaron Rodgers was still in the game, the offense was playing like crap, total garbage. They didn't want to do much of anything. I mean, you know, the MVP of this game, if you had to pick one for the Packers, if you don't want to take DeShone Kizer for simply having to come in relief of a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Green Bay, that's a tough job. It's proven to be a tough job over 26 years. Then I'd have to say, you know, J.K. Scott, even though he didn't kick very well, he certainly got a lot of opportunities, unfortunately, because the Packers didn't score a single point. So it was ugly, but they weren't trying. They're in worse shape than we thought going into next year. Kentrell Bryce, get lost. Can't tackle. Terrible. Awful. Bashaud Breeland, iffy. Didn't look great either. It was like they were deflated because they didn't have their boys out there. Jair Alexander was out. Is he that much the heart and soul of the secondary that everybody played so poorly? You know, it's not the worst thing if he is. As a rookie, that's great because we're going to have him for the next, hopefully, decade, and we're going to need a heart and soul. On defense. On offense, Davante Adams doesn't play. I hope that Davante Adams could barely walk because it's an injustice not to give him the opportunity to set a new Packers record when he has proven himself to be the best receiver on this team longer than just this season and while Jordy Nelson was here. I'll go out on a limb and say that, I guess. So it's unfortunate that Adams wasn't able to play and get that record. If Aaron Rodgers is out there, you would expect Adams to play if he could. He didn't. Rodgers gets the concussion. I think we should probably talk about that, Jacob. There are a lot of people who hated the decision for Rodgers to play. Then that parlayed into the discussion about how much influence Rodgers has over the decisions that the organization is making. What kind of input is he going to have moving forward with the head coaching search? Will he have any? What about the draft? You know, we all these things that we were worried about kind of manifested themselves in this game. Now, I hope that, you know, I don't ever want a player to get a concussion. We know too much about concussions to know that they're terrible for anybody, mild or other. I hope that he didn't have one play and just kind of take his losses and just say, you know what, cut his losses and just say, I'm not going to risk something worse happening today. That was just rough. It was a rough day. And to see the Packers play that way in the season finale, if anybody's listening to this show that was in the stands today, I feel really, you know, I am very sorry for you. And I feel very sorry that you went for the experience that is Lambeau Field, that is a Packers game at Lambeau Field. They play so well there in December. And on the last showing of 2018, their last opportunity to show their fans something. I mean, they could have lost the game 24-23 and just gave up a last-second play to the Lions, and I think everybody would have been okay with that. They didn't score a single point. So I don't know what the hell happened to this team in 2018, but I could not be more glad that it's over.
Well, you mentioned it, and there's a story I just read, and I apologize if this is old news, but it's the first I've seen of it. And it's interesting because when I ran into the tunnel after, I think it was after halftime, I honestly can't remember, I saw an ambulance come into the stadium, and it was parked by the Packers locker room. And now that makes a hell of a lot more sense because I just read a story that said Aaron Rodgers went to a hospital in an ambulance after sustaining the concussion. Now, Jason, I was skeptical when it was announced he had a concussion, perhaps irresponsibly so. But if he's going to a hospital, I mean, that's going at great lengths to fake something if that were the case. But I strongly doubt that's the case at this point. And I probably never should have thought that anyways. But if he has a concussion and is going to the hospital, I mean, that's a cause for concern. Concussions are a unpredictable injury. I mean, we've seen Sam Shields. I mean, granted, Sam Shields had a bunch right in a row, but he had one concussion in week one, and he never played for the Packers again. He was out of the league for an entire year and was still having headaches and symptoms and such during the NFC Championship game that year that the Packers played in. So that was a full 4 months later. It just goes back to, again, we talked about it. I wanted DeShone Kizer to play, and again, not because I'm pro-tanking or I'm pro-anything like that, but you got to protect your biggest asset in what are – these are meaningless football games, and that's what they are. And that's what they turned into, and this isn't even like confirmation bias or after-the-fact hindsight, because I told you guys I didn't want them to play as soon as they were eliminated from the playoffs. And not because of draft position, not because of the schedule, not because of anything stupid like that, but because he is owed $134 million over the next 4 years, and getting him hurt doesn't do – I mean, that's not positive, obviously. So the Packers were completely irresponsible. They completely botched this. And I blame everybody going from Joe Philbin all the way up to Mark Murphy, because – it is Aaron Rodgers' job to want to play in these games. It is Aaron Rodgers' job to talk about how it matters for pride. It matters for, you know, whatever it was. It is the organization's job to look out for the best interest of the long-term prognosis of this franchise. And, I mean, obviously I can't say that the Packers' 2019 future became even murkier today because of this, but it's an unnecessary storyline that they did not have to have going into this game. They could have easily just gone with Kizer, put him in a better position to succeed, because quite frankly, anytime the backup quarterback comes in the middle of the game, they've built a game plan the entire week around the idea that Aaron Rodgers is going to be the starting quarterback, or whoever your starter is, it doesn't matter. Putting the backup quarterback in the middle of a game is always a tough spot. So they set DeShone Kizer up to fail in that regard as well. Jason, what are your thoughts here? Because, like I said, you know, I blame everybody, because even if Aaron Rodgers told Gutekunst and Murphy and all those guys, no, I want to play, well, that is where it's their job to be responsible and say, Aaron, it's in your best interest, it's in the franchise's best interest that you not play these last two games. So what are your thoughts on the fact that he did play and now at least he has an injury, or at minimum he has an injury going into the off season?
Well, it's hindsight now. I mean, I'm just not wired to want the Packers to lose, and their best chance to win is with Aaron Rodgers playing. And I want to respect the fact that he's a competitor, and if he wants to be out there, it's football. You know, the whole take on and the approach of putting players in bubble wrap, you know, okay, that's fine. And then all of a sudden what happens? As soon as you take the bubble wrap off, the next day or the next game, they get hurt. I love Aaron Rodgers, and I'm very biased. And I don't want him taking over this team and making decisions for the Packers, but I respect his desire and his probably demanding that he play these last two games. You know, this team needed something. And I think he's trying to lead and be a leader of this team. I think he really cares. He's trying. He's aging. This is an aging veteran. And as great as these players are on the field, nobody really stops and takes the time to think about how much we've all changed as people from the time we were in our early 20s to our mid-30s. Some of us aren't in our mid-30s. Jacob, you're not there yet. There's so many things that happen and so many life events that take place that change us, that change our mind, that change our heart. I mean, I'm sounding very sappy right now, but I'm just trying to say that, you know, take a second and understand who Aaron Rodgers is as a person and you know, why would he want to play? Would you want to sit on the sidelines when your teammates count on you and you know that you not being out there is going to change the way the team plays? Look how they played today. Look what you saw. I can't want a single fan, brothers and sisters, to sit in the stands on the best weather day of the year, let alone a day like today, to watch that BS. It was crap. The Packers owe a refund to every single person that sat in the stands today. It was pathetic. And a lot of it was because Aaron Rodgers wasn't in the game. Had Aaron Rodgers played, the Packers don't get shut out. It doesn't happen. As badly as the Packers did this year with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and as bad as some of his games were, I look at the Detroit game in Detroit earlier this season. And some of the other games when he struggled, it was abysmal. Team the best chance to win, and he's a huge boost to this team. I'm concerned to hear your report, Jacob. I'm trying to find something on it, and I don't see anything yet. I'm looking for it. And I hope that he's okay. I don't want to, you know, the sky is falling. But, you know, I want to kick it back to you and ask you for your quick take before we move on to our next topic, okay? They're not the, you know, again, comparisons get blown out of proportion, so just bear with me. I'm not comparing Aaron Rodgers to Sam Shields, but we saw what happened to Sammy Shields 2 years ago. Week one, 2016, Shields gets hurt against the Jaguars. He never plays another snap for the Packers. He's back in the league playing for the Rams, but he's not in Green Bay. A concussion cost him an entire season. Aaron Rodgers is going to turn 36 next season. I would imagine that if it was that bad, we probably would have heard something by now. Maybe I'm wrong. But do you, you know, I guess, I know you're not a doctor, Jacob, and I know you have nothing to go off of any more than I do, but we know he had an issue in 2010. He missed week 15 against the Patriots, I should say, with a concussion. So we know it's not the first one that he's had, and you know that each time you get one, it can cause more and more issues. Are you worried about the off season coming up and next season, given all of those facts?
Yeah, I mean, I am worried because, again, it's an unpredictable injury. Now, most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, a player has a concussion, they miss one game, they come back. Randall Cobb is an example. He missed last week's game against the Jets. He was back this week against the Lions. Now, it doesn't always work that way, though. You mentioned Sam Shields. Sam Shields had a much more diverse is the wrong word, but a prolonged history of those concussions. Sam Shields had several within like a calendar year. I think that one against Jacksonville was like his third or fourth within, 15 months or so, something like that. I don't remember exactly how that all played out from a calendar, but this is Rodgers' third concussion that's been documented. He had two in 2010, you mentioned. He had one against Detroit. before playing the Patriots, and then he had one earlier in that year against Washington, where he ended up coming back and playing the following week. So it's just a concern, and my bigger concern is it was completely unnecessary. Again, Rodgers never should have been in that position to get that concussion. I agree with the things you said about how, you know, Rodgers wants to play and he should want to play and all that stuff. I completely agree with those things. But it's the organization's job to look out in the best interest of the franchise. And they didn't do that. And now if any part of Aaron Rodgers' season next year is in jeopardy because of this injury, that lays squarely at the feet of those three men that I just mentioned. Joe Philbin, who, quite frankly, I don't want to be disrespectful, but is a figurehead in this scenario. He's not going to be the head coach. He's not in the long-term plans of the franchise. So how the hell is he going to tell Aaron Rodgers it's time to sit? But Brian Gutekunst and Mark Murphy, those two are squarely in charge of what is going on, both now and in the immediate future of the Green Bay Packers. And they should have said, Joe, Aaron, let's have a conversation. You are sitting. No questions asked. So, yes, I'm concerned. As you mentioned, though, I'm not a doctor, and we'll see what happens. You know, Rodgers obviously has 9 months now to heal before he has to play another meaningful snap. So we'll see what happens there, but this is inexcusable, in my opinion, and gross incompetence on the Packers. And Mark Murphy and Brian Gutekunst, the onus is on you if this turns into a long-term thing. As far as the actual game goes, there's not a ton to discuss. Because when it's 31 bagel, I mean, what the hell can we... And in a game where, I mean, the Packers, DeShone Kizer played most of the game, Justin McCray played left tackle. Like, I mean, there's just not a lot to be gleaned from this game. However, Jason, I would be remiss if I did not bring up that friend of the show, Matt Prater, threw a touchdown pass today. So, for a little comedic relief, what are your opinions on Matt Prater's fake field goal touchdown pass?
Can't say any of them on the show. Back to you, Jacob.
That's fair. That was funnier than I thought it was going to be.
I'll come back. I'll tell you what. You know, I'm a smart ass, if nothing else, and everyone knows that by now. Been doing this show 4 seasons. So congrats to you, by the way, on 4 seasons together. It's fantastic, and I look forward to a fifth. The bigger issue is, I will say this, as hapless as the day was, there's nothing worse than the issues the team has had on special teams over the last, as I'm sitting here watching the Titans run a nicely executed reverse on their kick return. You'll never see the Packers do that. We're recording this on Sunday night. When a guy splits out wide and not a single defensive player picks him up, that's a joke. I mean, this isn't the question you asked, Jacob. You wanted the comedic relief, and I don't mean to, you know, bury the lead or move us into a discussion we're not ready to have yet. It was disgusting from a special teams standpoint, and Ron Zook we can't move on from him and replace him soon enough in my eyes, and I know that he will get replaced. I feel very confident of that because there was no way the Packers can expect anybody to respect them if they walk into 2019 with Zook still running their special teams unit. Forget who threw the ball. I've never seen a kicker throw a touchdown pass in my life, and of course it happens against my team. Just the absolute,
with your favorite personal kicker.
With the absolute poop, and that's not the word I want to use, cherry, on top of the sundae that is the Packers 2018 season. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I hope that 2018 was meant to shove in my face everything that I had coming and everything that I deserve all in one season and get it out of its system. So going into next year, I know that I have a clean slate and that the football gods aren't out to get me. Between the officiating and the fact that our starting quarterback started every game, threw only two interceptions, and this team only won six games, the special teams absolute debacle, and everything else that was. I just don't know. You know, I will say, on a completely unrelated note, we might as well just go off the rails here, Jacob. The Ravens won their game today. I picked them to go to the playoffs. You thought it was silly at the time, which is fine. I mean, I'm not poking fun at you for it. There's a lot of things that don't work out in a preseason prediction. But Ty Montgomery almost had a key fumble, and the Ravens could have lost because of it in that game, although I think it was a bad play call and it was poor execution. I don't think it was necessarily Montgomery's fault, but he did fumble the ball. And I thought that was just a little bit ironic. Awful. Absolutely awful. And I'll tell you this right now. I think the NFL should have busted out the breathalyzer. And if Prater had blown any illegal limit for the state of Wisconsin, I think they should have waved off the pass. That's my take.
Well, based on what we said before, I'm going to go ahead and guess that he wouldn't have passed that test. But, yeah, the Ravens did make the playoffs, and, you know, good for them. I think that they have a chance to make some noise as well. And we'll talk about Wild Card Weekend at the end of the show here, since the Packers will not be participating in it. And those matchups are essentially set. The winner of Colts-Titans will take on the Houston Texans. But we'll get to all that here in a little bit. Jason, like I mentioned, there's not a whole lot to talk about in terms of this game because, like I said, what the hell could you possibly have learned from this? So I'm going to go, like I mentioned, one of the reasons I wanted to watch this game was the nostalgia route, and Randall Cobb and Clay Matthews probably just played their last games at Lambeau Field, and, well, as members of the home team, I should say. Neither really did anything of note. Matthews had a pressure, kind of, that resulted in the 10th-and-a-half sack of Kyler Fackrell's season, which is amazing in and of itself, considering what we all thought about him going into the regular season. But I want to go back and look at some fond memories because, obviously, those two have been a part of plenty of them. Jason, let's start with Cobb. Obviously, he's been a productive player since he was in Green Bay. He was drafted after they won the Super Bowl in 2010, had a bang in his first game. He had two touchdowns in his first game against Green Bay, or as a Packer, I should say, against New Orleans in that first game. But just thinking about Cobb, what's your favorite memory of Randall Cobb in a Packers uniform?
Week 17 against the Bears. I have a couple. I mean, I have a couple, so and if he's not coming back, then I want to go through them because Randall Cobb has done great things since he became a Packer and was drafted. I remember where I was standing when I saw the pick come through, and I didn't know who he was because back at that time I wasn't writing and doing these shows, and so my research and my knowledgeability was very limited. I was looking at it from a fan perspective, and I usually would research guys after they were picked. But there was a lot of excitement about him, and so I knew that there was a chance he was going to be really good. Who doesn't remember the 109-yard kickoff return in his first game as a Packer against the Saints on opening night, 2011, when the Packers took the field as defending Super Bowl champions and beat the New Orleans Saints with a prime Jimmy Graham on that roster on opening day. Week 17 against the Bears, obviously the big game winner. The game winner this season against the Bears, which ended up being his last real prolific moment. And the Hail Mary catch against the Giants in the end zone. It's just the most Randall Cobb thing ever. I also believe, if I'm not mistaken, it was Cobb who made the first down catch to seal the victory against the Patriots at Lambeau Field, the game that you and I were both in the house for in 2014. If he's not back, and it looks like he won't be, I'm absolutely going to miss him. He was a Packers player through and through. It's hard to see those guys go. I understand why it has to happen, but absolutely great player. And like I said, I guess I couldn't pick one. I had to cheat and list a couple.
And that's a sign of what kind of player he's been since he's been in Green Bay, obviously, that you can't pick just one. You know, you can't even pick just one against the Chicago Bears. I mean, there's two plays that you mentioned against the Bears, and both of those would be on my list, certainly. You mentioned the first down catch against the Patriots. That was a big one. There was a first down catch against the Dallas Cowboys in the Dez Bryant game, which was an incredible play. Cobb caught it, and that sealed the win. To send the Packers into the NFC Championship game. There's so many things about Randall Cobb. I mean, there was a photo that came, it surfaced after the game was over, and it was Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb, and they were hugging, both of which appeared to be emotional. I'm a little emotional just thinking about that, just because, I mean, obviously we have this personal connection to the Packers. There's players that you grow attached to. They've been here for a very long time. Randall Cobb has been here for a very long time. He was drafted by Green Bay, developed, turned into a star, got a second contract. He's been here for a really long time. And to see him go, even if it's the right decision, it's okay to be upset or sad or whatever emotion you want to use for those things. It's the same way I felt when the Packers cut Jordy Nelson. I felt and still feel that was the right move at the time. That doesn't mean I have to be happy about it. That's just kind of how this business works, and it's unfortunate that it does, but that is how it works. For me, though, I mean, I know I mentioned that there's several plays. The one that sticks out is, it's in our intro, Jason, the play, the 48-yarder to beat the Chicago Bears. Now, that Packers team wasn't that good. They ended up going one and done in the playoffs. But for all the things that, for all the things that Packers team went through, to win the division that year, have Aaron Rodgers come back and make that play to that man who also, a lot of people don't talk about it, but that was Randall Cobb's first game back as well. Not only that, that was a huge play, but not only that, as that play happened, I like jumped on the floor and popped right back up, to which my friends now refer to as the worm. And that's how that was born. I performed the worm as Randall Cobb caught that touchdown. And it definitely helps. It's against the Chicago Bears, the team that is in my hometown. So Randall Cobb, great Packer, definitely going to be a Packers Hall of Famer, for the team Hall of Fame, obviously, not pro football. Unfortunate that his time is up, but his time is up. He's been a consummate professional on and off the field. You know, he's played hurt. He's gutted through injuries. And made some really big plays for the Packers during his time here in Green Bay. He'll go somewhere else. As long as it's not Minnesota or Green Bay, I will wish him the best of luck. And even if it is Minnesota or Green Bay, I'll wish him some luck, except for those two games a year that he comes back and plays against the Packers. Clay Matthews is the other one. Again, it seems unlikely. If I had to pick one, I would bet it's more likely Matthews is back than Cobb, just because of the lack of depth at that position. The Packers have three young guys at wide receiver that they seem to like. They don't have players like that at pass rusher, but it's still pretty unlikely that Clay Matthews is back in Green Bay next year. So, Jason, again, same question. What's your favorite memory of Clay Matthews?
It's got to be the Super Bowl. When Clay made the was part of the fumble on Rashard Mendenhall. I also, again, you know, there's a couple. He had a really nice pick six against the New York Giants to preserve the Packers' undefeated record in 2011. That was a big play in that game. That was when Clay was capable of making that type of play. He took the ball away from Adrian Peterson in the middle of a pile standing up in his rookie season, just ripped it out of his arms and ran it back for a touchdown in 2009. That was incredible. He had a pick six against the Cowboys in 2010, which was an incredible play. And then, I remember the all the sacks on Jay Cutler where he's getting up and counting how many he's got. is he and Charles Woodson trolled Jay Cutler and the Bears better than any other Packers players, I think, in the history of this team. So, great player. It's hard to see these guys lose a step and not be what they are. I don't think we'll see Clay back because he just doesn't. I think he'll get offered some better money, and the Packers need to be smart about this. You know, Clay has definitely got some life left in him if he's used the right way, but it's basically like a pass rush specialist, third down specialist. You know, he can't play a full game anymore. He can't run guys down from behind. He did have that, you know, remember that big sack that he had on Kevin Cobb in 2010, the first game of the season, where he like jumped on Cobb's back and landed on him. And that's when Michael Vick came in and nearly disrupted our lives completely because of that play. I mean, Clay was just an explosive beast. And let's not forget that it was one of the picks the Packers acquired in the Brett Favre trade that they ended up using to move up and pick Clay Matthews. So there's something to be said there. You know, for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Sometimes the reaction is great and better. Sometimes it's the same, and sometimes it's worse. In that case, I think the Packers did okay. They drafted Clay Matthews, and a season later, they won a championship. So it's a big turning of the tide, and that's tough for the quarterback because these are friends of his in the locker room, and there's two big faces that are going to be leaving that were part of that championship team. And I think that's it. I don't think there's any other guys that are left on this roster now except for Bulaga, who were still on this team when the Packers won won that Super Bowl. So, and Crosby, Mason Crosby. So,
Tremont Williams.
Tremont, but it, you know, that depends on whether or not Tremont's back next season. So it's just the faces are dwindling, and we're seeing Aaron Rodgers go through what Brett Favre went through, which is he's having to learn how to play with some younger guys. And that, again, I think that's the reason why Aaron wanted to be out there today, is because he's like, listen, I don't want to be like the last guy. I want these young guys to endear myself to them. And I want the future to work, and I want these guys to take over and give us a chance to come back next year and be in the playoffs because, you know, by the time the Packers potentially can play their next playoff game, It will have been almost 1,000 days since the last time they played in one. And that's just territory that we're not used to. So part of it is the team has to prepare for replacing some of these players. You know, is EQ the answer to Randall Cobb? He could be. Very different players, but he could be. Who's the answer to replacing Clay Matthews? Probably going to be acquired this offseason. If not, then I'm going to go and burn something down because they absolutely need to address pass rusher, and it's time, and it's not Kyler Fackrell for those of you out there who are screaming his name in your car while listening to this show on record right now. So I'll miss him. Clay might be back. Who knows? I think someone will throw him more money and he'll go there and he'll play, and I'm prepared for it. I think the Packers they got to move forward and they have to be smart, and it starts now. By the way, I don't mean to steal your thunder, but I know that I think you're in the car. If you're not in the car, welcome back home. I'm glad you made it home safely. The Packers will pick 12th. It is official. The Packers will pick 12th in this upcoming draft. So it was going to be 14th with the loss today to the Lions. It was ugly to watch. It was 3 hours. We'll never get back of watching terrible Packers football, but it moves the Packers up two spaces. And it's very key and important because there is a couple less quarterbacks that are going to be in this draft. And the teams that are picking ahead of Green Bay, a lot of them seemingly already have their quarterback situation settled. So that's a lot of skills players that are going to come off the board by the time the Packers pick at 12. And fortunately, they're picking 12 and not 14th, because they're going to need some impact guys to replace some of these vets that we've have grown to love.
There you have it. They'll pick 12th. Yes, you did steal my thunder, but that's okay. I will handle that like a professional that I am not. To get back to the original topic, it was Clay Matthews' memory. I've mentioned it several times on this show and anywhere to anybody who's willing to listen. Clay Matthews is one of my favorite Packers players ever. I can't make a list right off the top of my head, but if I did, he's probably in the top five. And I've often thought that some of the criticism of him has been unfair, unfounded, that he played with a broken thumb. He's played with other injuries. He struggled with some injuries, obviously, and has missed some time. But the guy was a monster as soon as he came into the league and got onto the field. You mentioned the stealing of a fumble from Adrian Peterson. And Adrian Peterson, people have – I don't know if they've forgotten, but Adrian Peterson was kind of the Packers' kryptonite for a really long time. So to watch that take place and happen was something I was thrilled with. And then, you know, you mentioned the sack of Kevin Cobb. He had 6 sacks in the first 2 games of that championship season. And of that championship season, listen, I know Charles Woodson is a first ballot Pro Football Hall of Famer. I know Nick Collins was a great player. I know Tremont Williams had a huge year that year. I know B.J. Raji had an interception return for a touchdown that essentially sealed an NFC championship game. But Clay Matthews was the best player on that defense that season of a team that won the Super Bowl. And I don't think a lot of people talk about that. And I don't think that's necessarily a fair thing because as great as those guys were, Clay Matthews won the, I believe it was the AP Defensive Player of the Year that year. The NFL award went to Troy Polamalu, who they ended up beating in the Super Bowl that year. My favorite memory of Clay Matthews, well, first I should say I've had some other access to Matthews. So my favorite memory is when I got to meet him. He was really cool for, you know, for being a California cool type that some have thought about before. He was actually really humble, really down to earth, which was exciting. You know, they always want that to happen when you're meeting one of your favorite players. But I had that opportunity in 2011, and that was fun. It was nice to do that. But, Jason, you mentioned it. There's no question. I don't believe in game-to-game momentum. Like, I don't think anything that happened this week, for example, is going to matter next week. But I do believe in momentum swings within a game, obviously. Those things are very prevalent and very real. And the Packers Super Bowl, when they played against the Steelers, it was 21-3 right out of the gate. And then it was 21-17 at the start of the fourth quarter. And it really felt like, and Jason, I mean, you probably felt this way if the game was 35-3, but I mean, at 21-17, it really felt like a game that was slipping away. And I got goosebumps down my spine thinking about it right now because there's a great shot from NFL Films and the sound team of there that was there that day. They got Kevin Green telling Matthews, say, nobody, you know, Woodson's gone. Nobody's stepping up and rallying troops. It's time, and it's your time, young guy, is basically what he was saying. This was Matthews' second year in the league. It wasn't like he was a seasoned vet. He told the young guy, it's your time. You're our impact player. You make that play. And Clay Matthews, the very next play, tells Ryan Pickett to spill it, which means push it to the outside, push it right into him. Matthews put his shoulder pad right into the football. Rashard Mendenhall fumbled. And the Packers recovered it, and in my opinion, essentially won the game right there. If that play doesn't happen, I don't think the Packers win that game. So there's no question in my mind what the best play of his career is. He's a surefire Packers Hall of Famer. He's the all-time franchise's all-time leader in sacks. He's one of the best defensive players on the Packers in this new generation. Obviously, you know, the previous generations, guys like Reggie White, people like that. The new generation, Charles Woodson, Clay Matthews, some of those guys obviously belong on that list. But Matthews is very much in that conversation, and he was the best player on a championship defense. And he'll always have my gratitude and appreciation for being that. You know, the picture that will always stick out in my head is him forcing the fumble and then holding the championship belt next to Aaron Rodgers on the podium after they won Super Bowl 45. So if that was it for Cobb and Matthews, hey, guys, you know, thanks. There's a lot of memories that have been made. The Packers have sustained a lot of success because of those two players, and they deserve the gratitude that they've received since then. And I wish them luck again, unless it's Chicago or Minnesota, wherever it is that they go. Jason, it's the end of the year. The season is over. We are going to do some grades and things like that as the off season progresses before we get into draft season and all that sort of stuff. But I think we can award some simple awards now. What I want to talk about first is, obviously the season didn't go as planned. My question is, when did you know, or when did you feel like you know, to use Wayne Larrivee's trademark statement, when was the dagger in for this season? Now, obviously, the Packers were not mathematically eliminated until they lost to the Chicago Bears. My answer, though, and I said it on this show, when Ty Montgomery fumbled against the Los Angeles Rams, that was the end. I thought that the Packers had found ways to lose several games up until that point. They had a brutal schedule down the stretch, and it just didn't feel like a year that was meant to be. Now, there's obvious candidates also. The Cardinals game could come to mind because that got Mike McCarthy fired. The Seahawks game is one a lot of people kind of conceded. But for me, it was the Rams. And the Packers had a chance to win that game. And that seems like the type of win that could get some good feeling in the locker room. We just beat an undefeated team on the road. And they didn't. And since they didn't, that's when I thought the season was over. But, Jason, for you, when was the dagger stuck in?
It was the Patriots game. I mean, the Rams, we talked about it, and I agreed with you. I was just pissed off when they lost. I just, you know, they needed at that point to get a statement win. And they had it. They had at least a chance. I mean, who knows? Rodgers might have thrown a terrible interception and ended that game anyway if Montgomery does take a knee like he's supposed to. But that was a hallmark win waiting to happen, and that could have changed a lot of things. You know, you talk about how you don't believe in momentum from week to week. I have a hard time believing that if they pull that in Los Angeles and hand the Rams their first loss, which would have been at their first loss at the time, that they don't come out and play, at least play better against the Patriots, if not win that, unless not beat them. Then you had the loss to the Vikings where Tremont Williams, of all people, muffs a punt return and doesn't muff it. He just biffs it and doesn't handle it properly. And they turn the ball over and they lose in Minnesota for the third straight season. And obviously the true dagger was the Cardinals game. I don't think anybody thought there was hope after that. I mean, sure, they came back and beat the Falcons the following week, and the playoff machine scenario started going a little crazy, and it depended on a lot of things. But the first thing was beat the Bears. Packers couldn't do it. This season was just doomed in a lot of ways, and it wasn't obvious at the time because there was so much ahead of us, but you know, from the way that the tie against the Vikings happened in week two, the near loss in week one because of the stupidity of Clay Matthews, who we just talked about, that was actually a legitimate penalty on Matthews in week one that could have cost the Packers this game. You know, the Bears have to be looking back and wondering how they let how they lost the game to the Packers, as bad as Green Bay was. It was supposed to be the opposite. These two teams and the way that the season ended. So this was just a crap season. I mean, you were in the stands in Detroit for one of the worst games I've ever seen a kicker have, and a kicker who's been very successful and seemed to have overcome all of his demons from 2012. Just a rough year. Like I said, I hope that they got a lot of things out of their system this season because they've got a lot to look forward to, but we'll see what they carry forward. You know, we've got a lot of analysis to do, but you know, for me, it was the Patriots game. That was their last to really get a hallmark win. They just didn't do it.
I agree. Sorry, issues with the mute button there, so you guys don't have to hear me driving down the highway the whole time. But yeah, that's fair. I think that maybe I was a little premature in that thought potentially, but that, you know. You mentioned it. The Packers did have several chances to recover. I just never thought they would, and they proved me right down the stretch there. Something else that's a disturbing trend, you mentioned losing to the Vikings. The Packers haven't beaten the Vikings since Christmas Eve of 2016, which was JJ's last interaction with the beard guy. I really don't know what else to call him because, frankly, I don't know his name or what he does with the team. But that was the last time they beat the Vikings. They have lost four games in a row to the Detroit Lions. I mean, obviously you could put some qualifiers in there and say, well, you know, Brad Hundley started one of those games and Deshaun Kizer played the vast majority of one of those games, but they still lost. And it's a Lions team that used to never beat Green Bay, especially in Green Bay. And they won quite a few games in a row. So that's a disturbing trend. Jason, let's go happy first, and then we'll move into sad before we close out here. But who is the MVP of this year's team? To me, the answer is Devontae Adams. I think that any other answer is probably the wrong one. Adams, had he played today, would have set the single-season record for most receptions in one season. You saw his value on the field today. The Packers were unable to do much of anything on offense without him. He's a top-five receiver in the NFL. I know that's Zach Jacobson's take, but I'm going to steal it. Don't at me. Whatever it is. Devontae, you can have your list of top-five receivers. Adams isn't number one, but he's on that list, and he's very good. And as somebody who is one of the co-founders of the Team Devontae fan club, I am absolutely thrilled that he's done as well as he has the last couple of years. He is a stud, cornerstone player, MVP of this year's team. I don't think that there's any questions asked. Jason, do you have anything else to say in that regard?
No, I go with Adams. Clear MVP. There's not even a close second on this team. There's a lot of role players that just didn't do a whole lot. If you want to do like an unsung hero award, I'm going with Corey Linsley. He started 16 games. He played them all. He missed very few snaps. He played like crap today, but so did everyone else. I think the team came out and decided how they were going to approach today in their own way, and it wasn't very good. It wasn't very pretty. So I'm not going to count that against Linsley, but unsung hero of the season because he held down the middle of that offensive line.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Corey Linsley was really good for most of the year, too. So that was one who definitely deserved consideration. But like you mentioned, so if we have Devontae Adams as the MVP, there's no question who the Offensive Player of the Year is then. That's Devontae Adams. Defensive Player of the Year, Jason, who is your guy?
Are we going – was this Defensive Player of the Year?
Yeah, this year's.
I was thinking about this, and the defense. It's funny because the defense actually played was one of the more solid units when the offense was struggling. But if I had to try to pick an MVP, I mean, I guess you go with Kenny Clark because he was the most consistent guy and he made the biggest impact. You know, Jair Alexander was good in spots, but he also struggled. I think if Kenny Clark had played a full season, he probably would have made even a bigger impact than he already did. He missed a couple of games because he ended up on injured reserve with the elbow issue. So I'll go with Kenny Clark.
That's fair. Kenny Clark came to mind. I am actually going to go with Jair Alexander. I think that you guys remember, I'm sure, when when Clay Matthews, if Jason was on the Packers, we have an interesting team, that's for sure. But when Clay Matthews first started for Green Bay, how when he was on the field versus when he was not, it changed the whole defense. And you saw glimpses this year when Alexander was on the field versus not, that something similar. He can play inside. He can play outside. He's definitely a cornerstone type player, and it looks like Brian Gutekunst hit a home run in his first draft pick as Packers general manager, and that's a big deal. I mean, I don't give him that MVP award lightly. Kenny Clark, certainly deserving. You could have a conversation with me about Kyler Fackrell. I don't know how much I would listen, but it's possible you could come up with that for me. But I think that those two guys are the ones that are mostly in consideration. Jason, what was your biggest surprise from a player standpoint this year? Who's somebody who jumped out at you that you didn't expect? I feel like this answer should be pretty easy, but I don't know. What do you got?
Equanimeous St. Brown. I didn't think he was going to be as much of a factor as he was, and he became a huge part of the offense at the end of the season. It gives us a lot of hope for the receiving game season because he's going to be a big part of it. He came on late, had some struggles early on. We knew Marquez Valdez-Scantling was going to be good. He kind of flashed early in the season, and then he was pretty good throughout. So that wasn't really necessarily a surprise. EQ to me was a big surprise. The fact role on defense, sure, but, you know, he was up and down. He had the big game against Seattle. He had a sack in today's game against the Lions, but not the most consistent guy on the planet. So I'll go with Equanimeous.
Okay, well, I was going to go with Tyler Fackrell because we were talking about him potentially not making a roster for Vince Beagle. I know he was up and down. Is Tyler Fackrell a 10-sack player? No. I don't think anybody that is actually going to think that. But he has, at least to me, proven he can be this team's third preferred edge rusher going into next season. Now, he could be a third preferred edge rusher on a good defense. Fackrell had a much bigger year than I ever anticipated. I think many left for dead. He definitely deserves this award, in my opinion. Equanimeous St. Brown, though, I mean, I can't argue. Well, you might have been surprised. I guess I thought he was a day two talent. But going into the season, I agree. I didn't expect anything real big from him. His numbers weren't that gaudy. It's not like he had a huge year, but he did get better every single week for the Packers. So that was a positive, most certainly, and a big development for the Packers going into next year. So I think we're pretty set on defensive rookie of the year is Jaire Alexander. Jason, if you have any objections, feel free to speak up, but I can't really picture that. Offensive rookie of the year, Jason, I imagine you're going to go with St. Brown.
Well, actually, I'll go with Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and I finally am saying his name correctly. Not Marquez, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, because he had the biggest impact and he's got the most, you know, I mean, if balls are placed correctly, and I don't want to, you know, bag on the quarterback too much, but he could have had one today too. If the balls are thrown the way they should have been thrown, his stats are a lot bigger and he's got a lot more big explosive plays, and I think we're talking about him more. He's going to be an exciting player to watch on this offense just because of the speed factor that he finally gives this team that we didn't have for such a long time.
Okay, I'm actually going to go with St. Brown just because I feel like I know that his numbers weren't as good as Valdes-Scantling's, but I do feel like he was more consistent. I think by the end of the year you saw that Rodgers seemed to trust him the most, and that matters. Whether or not it should is another story for another day, but it does matter right now, and I'm going to go with St. Brown. I think that he earned that most certainly. So let's go to the yuck side of things. I know for those of you that read Jason Stark, he always has like Cy Young, Cy Yuck, MVP, LVP, stuff like that. So that's kind of what we're doing. Jason, there's a lot of candidates to choose from here. Who was the most disappointing player on the Packers this season?
Ooh, man, why did I not anticipate this question coming? This might not be fair, but I want to say Nick Perry because I expected somehow, and foolishly, I expected him to be better, but he just wasn't. So I'm gonna go with Nick Perry. He ended up injured, but again, it's just a really disappointing season for him. And I know we're running out of time here. But I'll go Perry.
I will too. That's actually who I was going to go with. When he played, he wasn't productive. Maybe he wasn't healthy. We'll never really know. But that's kind of been the story of Nick Perry's career. When he's on the field, usually he's pretty good. This year he wasn't even good when he was on the field. So those are our awards for the season 2019. We'll have a lot more to talk about in our off-season shows. Jason, since we're running out of time real quick, playoff picture is pretty much, well, it is set in the NFC, so I'll start there. The Philadelphia Eagles are going to travel to Soldier Field to take on the Chicago Bears for Wild Card Weekend, and the other game will be the Dallas Cowboys against the Seattle Seahawks. Who do you have winning those games and why?
I'm going to go with the Eagles because I just really want it to happen really badly, and I don't know. I'm kind of inclined to take Dallas just because they seem to have a golden horseshoe this season. That's all I got.
That's fair. I actually, too, am picking the Eagles, especially if Nick Foles is healthy enough to play. If Nate Sudfeld's playing, yes, I'm picking the Bears. But I've just had this hunch for a while that if the Eagles got in, they could be really dangerous. They're the defending world champions. They're proud. They've been there before. The Bears don't have a ton of guys on their roster that have played in a playoff game before. The playoffs are altogether different than the regular season. That Bears defense is good enough to carry them all the way to the Super Bowl. But I'm going to take the Philadelphia Eagles to win that game because I've had that hunch for a while. On the other game, I'm picking the Cowboys because I don't think the Seahawks are very good, especially true on the road. That Cowboys defense is legitimate. They'll shut down that running game. Zeke Elliott will make enough plays for them. Amari Cooper probably hits one big one. And that's what I think happens in the NFC. In the AFC, Jason, the matchup is the Houston Texans will take on the winner of this Colts-Titans game that's going on right now. The Colts are leading 14-0 against Blaine Gabbert. So I think it's pretty safe to say that the Colts are going to win this game. I thought that going into the game anyways. I will take the Colts to win that game in Houston. I believe in Andrew Luck. And when you're picking a team like that, I want to pick the quarterback. And I don't trust Bill O'Brien one bit in a big spot like that. On the other game is the Baltimore Ravens will host, as you mentioned earlier, Jason, the Baltimore Ravens will host the Los Angeles Chargers. The Chargers are kind of a darling team this year, and I get that. They've been very good. They have a very good roster top to bottom. I think they find a way to get it done. I think Phillip Rivers plays well in a big spot. He didn't play well against the Ravens the last time they played, and that's what I think. I think the Chargers win that game. They make just enough plays. Lamar Jackson gets a little skittish in a rookie game. They shut down that running game, and the rookie kind of shies away in his first playoff game. So, AFC, Jason, Texans, Colts, let's assume, and then Chargers, Ravens. Who do you got?
I got the Texans, and I got the Chargers. I think the Chargers take care of it. I think the Ravens are an inflated playoff team this year. They happened to win a division that just got weak. For some reason, Pittsburgh just ran out of gas and fell apart, and Cleveland ran out of time to get hot and take over this division. And I have a feeling that the Cleveland Browns are going to become a team that nobody wants to play next season suddenly. And then, you know, for the Houston, I just think the Texans have too much mojo going for them. Whoever wins this game tonight between the Titans and the Colts is kind of on borrowed time. And the Colts kind of struggled through the season, and somebody had to come out of this division. So that's just, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that from a wild card perspective. It could have come anywhere. But if it had to be one of these two teams, neither of them are very – they're both kind of underwhelming. So, sure, they live to fight another week, but I think it's a short-lived.
Here's my first bold prediction of the playoffs. The Indianapolis Colts, Jason says, is on borrowed time. I say they're playing for the AFC Championship game in 2 weeks. And I'll let you know that later. Obviously, now that I said that, they'll probably lose by 40 points next week in Houston. But I actually think the Colts are dangerous, and I think they have some really good matchups coming their way should they get into the playoffs here. So that's what we have. That's going to do it for today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow me. I am at Jacob Westendorf, and you can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. Thank you guys for listening in all season long. It wasn't the season we wanted. Jason, one day you and I will be podcasting a Super Bowl championship. I sure hope and pray at least that's the case because that would be a very fun show to do, obviously. The Packers, though, that will not happen this year. They finished 6-9-1. That one tie still pisses me off that that's possible, but whatever. 6-9-1 is their final record. They will pick 12th in April's NFL draft. They lose their final game of the season 31-0. Against the Detroit Lions, the third out of fourth time that the Lions have won here at Lambeau Field. A lot of stuff's going to change. A lot of stuff's going to be talked about. Jason, we will be back next week talking Packers, wild card going into divisional round. The head coaching search tomorrow is Black Monday. So there's a lot of stuff to cover. Thank you for doing the show with me all season long. And thanks to you, the listener, because we would not do this show without you guys. I can promise you that. As always, listening, thank you for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
of the Pack Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.